When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. The Thing in the Mine. Welcome, dear listeners, to Whispers from the Dark. I'm your host, Raven Vale, and tonight we delve deep into the unforgiving embrace of the earth, into the claustrophobic darkness of a mine shaft, where the treasures extracted are sometimes paid for not just with sweat and toil, but with something far more terrifying. Our journey takes us to Leadville, Colorado, a town carved out of the rugged Rockies, built on the dreams and dangers of subterranean wealth. This is the chilling account of The Thing in the Mine, Leadville. At over 10,000 feet, it is one of the highest incorporated cities in North America, a place where the air is thin, the winters are brutal, and the history runs deep with the veins of silver and gold that once pulsed beneath its rocky terrain. For generations, men have descended into its depths, chasing fortunes and facing unimaginable hazards. Rockfalls, gas pockets, flooding. These are the known enemies of the miner. But sometimes, in the cold, unyielding silence below, something far more ancient, far more alien, makes itself known. Our story begins in the autumn of 1992. The mining boom of the late 19th century was long over, but smaller operations still dotted the landscape, delving into forgotten shafts or extracting residual ores. One such operation was a modest outfit working a resurrected silver vein just outside Leadville proper. The crew was small, experienced, and intimately familiar with the dangers and routines of working underground. Among them were two men, grizzled veterans of the depths, Frank Miller and his younger, but equally seasoned partner, Dave Carlson. Frank, nearing retirement, had spent nearly 40 years beneath the earth, his face etched with the lines of countless hours spent in dim light, his body hardened by relentless labor. Dave, in his late 30s, was a powerful man, steady and reliable, a perfect foil for Frank's often gruff but always watchful demeanor. They were assigned to a deep, exploratory tunnel, a narrow passage that burrowed further into what was believed to be a promising new vein. They were equipped with the standard tools of the trade, pneumatic drills, pickaxes, shovels, heavy-duty lamps, and crucially, a two-way intercom system for communication with the surface crew. The morning of their final shift began like any other. They descended into the cold, damp dark, their headlamps cutting swaths through the blackness, the echoing clang of their equipment soon fading into the deeper quiet of the earth. The surface crew expected their hourly check-ins, a routine broken only by breaks for lunch or a shift change. The first hint of trouble wasn't immediate. Their first few hourly check-ins were normal, punctuated by the dull thud of drills and the distant scrape of shovels. But by mid-morning, the check-ins stopped. Initially, the surface foreman, a man named Jim, assumed a power interruption to the intercom, a common enough occurrence in older mines. He tried hailing them repeatedly, his voice crackling into the dark, but received no response. After an hour of silence, a knot of unease began to tighten in his gut. This wasn't like Frank or Dave. They were meticulous about safety. A small rescue team, comprised of Jim and two other miners, was quickly assembled. They descended into the cool, silent descent cage, their own headlamps casting long, dancing shadows, their breaths pluming in the frigid air. The further they went, the heavier the silence became, broken only by the creak of the hoist and the drip of water from the tunnel walls. They reached the level where Frank and Dave had been working. The air was still, oppressive. No sound of drilling, no distant clang of tools. The rescue team began to move slowly, cautiously, their powerful lamps sweeping the narrow tunnel. It was a familiar environment, yet it felt utterly alien in the oppressive quiet. Then they found them, not lying on the ground, not trapped under debris, but impossibly, horrifyingly, fused with the very rock wall of the tunnel. Frank Miller and Dave Carlson. Their bodies were flattened, distorted, as if subjected to unimaginable pressure, somehow pressed into the solid granite, becoming one with the dark, unyielding stone. Their limbs were splayed, their faces frozen in expressions of mute, agonizing terror, their forms almost like macabre bas-reliefs carved directly into the living rock. It was a sight that defied all logic, all understanding of what could physically happen to a human body. It was as if they had been slammed against the wall by a force of unimaginable magnitude, and then somehow melted, physically bonded to the geological strata. The rescue team stared, their lamps trembling in their hands. They were seasoned miners, accustomed to grisly accidents, but this was beyond anything they had ever witnessed or even imagined. The air around the fused bodies was strangely warm, carrying a faint, acrid smell that Jim couldn't quite place. And then they noticed the tools. Frank and Dave's pneumatic drills, their pickaxes, even their heavy-duty lamps, lying just a few feet away. They weren't simply broken or bent. They were melted, distorted masses of blackened, molten metal, fused into the dusty floor as if subjected to temperatures far exceeding what any underground fire could produce. It was a scene of impossible violence, impossible heat, and utterly impossible physical trauma. The police arrived, then forensic teams, then specialists from various fields. The entire section of the mine was sealed off, becoming a grim tableau of an inexplicable tragedy. Experts examined the fused bodies, the melted tools, the untouched surrounding rock. There were no signs of explosives, no geological shifts, no gas leaks that could account for such extreme, localized pressure and heat. The rock itself showed no sign of rupture or collapse. It was as if the very laws of physics had been momentarily suspended or brutally violated within that narrow tunnel. The only remaining piece of evidence, besides the horrific scene itself, was the intercom unit. Remarkably, it was still intact, though its outer casing was slightly warped by what appeared to be residual heat. The forensic technicians carefully extracted the audio recording, hoping for some clue, some final message from the doomed miners. What they found, however, provided no answers, only a fresh layer of terror. The initial portion of the recording was mundane, the expected sounds of a mining operation, the dull thud of a drill, the scrape of a shovel, the occasional cough or low conversation. Then the sounds of mining ceased. The recording went silent for a moment, an unnatural stillness. And then it began. An eerie humming. It started low, almost subliminal, a resonant, mechanical, organic vibration that seemed to fill the very tunnel, growing steadily in intensity. It wasn't the hum of machinery, nor the buzz of electrical current. It was a pure, deep, unsettling frequency that seemed to vibrate through the recording, hinting at immense power of something vast and ancient. It grew louder, more insistent, a sound that seemed to bore directly into the listener's skull, chilling them to the bone. Then, piercing through the humming, came screams. Frank's, then Dave's. Not screams of pain alone, but of pure, unadulterated terror, of an encounter with something beyond human comprehension. They were sharp, desperate, quickly cut short, as if their very breath had been stolen. But the horror did not end there. Layered over their final, dying cries, filling the void created by their silencing, was another sound, a deep, unnatural growl. It was not the growl of any known animal, nor the roar of an engine. It was profound, guttural, resonating from a place of primal, unimaginable power. It was the sound of something immense, something monstrous, something utterly devoid of humanity, claiming its victims. The growl swelled, a terrifying crescendo, and then, abruptly, the recording cut out. Only static remained. The implications were chilling. Whatever had killed Frank and Dave was not a conventional mining hazard. It was alive. It produced an unholy hum, melted metal, and emitted a growl that spoke of raw, untamed power. The sheer impossibility of their deaths, fused with rock, suggested a force that could manipulate matter itself. The theories that emerged from the few individuals privy to the full details were varied, and each more unsettling than the last. Some speculated about a previously unknown geological phenomenon, a localized pocket of immense geothermal energy that somehow manifested in a way that caused matter to distort and fuse. But this failed to explain the humming, the screams, or the growl. Others whispered of something biological, an undiscovered creature that had burrowed its way from the deepest, untouched layers of the earth, disturbed by the miner's intrusion. A subterranean predator of monstrous size and terrifying abilities, capable of emitting focused energy and crushing its prey into the very bedrock. This theory accounted for the growl and the brutal physical force, but still struggled with the rapid melting and fusion. Then there were the truly outlandish theories, born from desperation and a lack of any rational explanation. Could it have been an interdimensional entity, a being from another reality that briefly intersected with our own, manifesting its terrifying power? Or perhaps something extraterrestrial, a crashed probe or a living organism from another world, discovered deep within the earth, reacting violently to human presence? The humming could be its communication, its power source, or simply the sound of its very existence. The fusion and melting, its defense mechanism, or its method of consumption. The mine was permanently sealed, its entrance dynamited, its secrets buried once more beneath tons of rock and earth. The official report remained vague, citing a unique and unexplainable mining accident. But for the families of Frank Miller and Dave Carlson, and for the few who heard that intercom audio, the truth was far more horrifying. Leadville today is a picturesque mountain town, its mining past a romanticized history. But beneath its surface, in the silent, lifeless tunnels of its abandoned mines, something remains. The echoes of an eerie hum, of desperate screams, and of a deep, unnatural growl. The thing in the mine. It waits. Thank you for joining me on Whispers from the Dark. Until next time, stay vigilant, and remember, some truths are best left in the shadows.